This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 53. In this episode, we're going to give you some Azure news, talk about the new G-Series images, premium storage, Docker, Azure Conf 2014, and more, recorded live October 23rd, 2014.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
A good day, CJ. How are you today?
Great. How about you?
Doing great, man. We had that was a lot of fun publishing this past week. We published our 52nd episode exactly 365 days from the very first episode. So that was, I have to say that when that one actually went live, even when we recorded it, even when we were going through all the pre-production stuff and everything, but when it finally went live, what was that? That was just 2 days ago on October the 21st, I think.
Yep.
That felt a little special.
Yeah, that was really cool. Like, I actually, I listened to the episode on the car. So on the way back from work last night. And so I just check my podcast app, make sure the episode's live on the podcast app. And so I started playing it and I was like, you know, we didn't really put a lot of thought into our birthday. And it's like, you know, we only really realized right before the show that it was going to be on the day, or you even realized right at the beginning, once we'd recorded, that it was going to come out on the same day, right? 365 days.
Yeah.
So I had no idea. So I don't really feel like we did it all that much justice. And if I was to do it again, I would have put on a special party hat and a couple of party poppers or something like that, because it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it would have been nice to do something, but I guess we'll have to wait till, I guess, you know, is 1 year important, or is it like 100 episodes is important? 1 year's cool, but I think 100 episodes, that's a milestone that I'd love to, that I'll be looking forward to.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool milestone. We'll definitely do something for that.
Yeah. So in this episode, holy moly, man, we have a chock full of news. I think that, you know, I posted something on our podcast Twitter account, a little quote. I saw you retweeted it too, yeah. Where it said, I think I quoted, said something like, Azure never releases anything new or something like that. Or when are they going to release something new?
Said like, no one ever.
Oh my God, these guys have been going crazy.
Oh my goodness. They keep absolutely smashing it. It just boggles my mind.
Yeah. So just real quickly. So what's up with you? Anything new going on with you before we dive into the content of the show?
I have a confession to make.
Uh-oh.
I have turned to the dark side.
Wait a minute. Wait. Are you on OS X?
Oh, hell no.
Okay. Are you on Android?
Oh, I was going to say something really rude to you then, but I managed to cut myself off. No. No, I'm not.
What did you do?
I'm. Let's just say I'm doing some competitive research.
Oh, so did you get a 6 or a 6 plus?
I got a 6.
Oh, on the iOS platform.
Yeah, here's my completely unthought out and completely unplanned reasoning.
Okay, be careful. We have to start playing the backup sound. The
beep, beep, beep. It's true. It's totally true. So here's my reasoning. One, I'm trying to push myself to do some Xamarin development and port my trips. And so I haven't used iOS for probably over 5 years. And so I'm dipping back into it, seeing what apps are like, seeing what all the new design stuff is like and things like that. See, apps have changed on iOS a lot.
Gotten pretty good, huh?
Well, A, they're really good, but also just the design language has changed a lot since I used iOS last time. A lot less apps are using the standard controls. In fact, almost none of them, right? From what I can see.
So how about some context? When was the last time you were on iOS?
Oh, I had an iPhone 4.
And you switched to that when Windows Phone came out, right?
Yeah, I switched off iPhone probably, I'd say, like 6 or 9 months after Windows Phone came out.
Gotcha. Okay.
So when my contract came up, I switched off and went to Windows Phone.
So it's been a few years.
It's been quite a while, and things have really changed. Like, it's just from a, you know, how apps are designed kind of point of view.
Mm.
So anyway, so I wanted to check that out. And also sort of work-wise, we've got a ton of stuff coming out on all sorts of different platforms now from Office, right? So there's Office on iOS and things like that. And so I wanted to try out all those and things like that. And plus, we do a ton of cross-platform demos for work things now. And so whipping out an iPhone is not as big a issue or, you know, bad thing as it used to be.
Well, I was on, I did the interview a couple of weeks ago with on the Azure podcast. I talked to the guys about how, how much the company has changed, how much Microsoft has changed. And from, I don't know if this is a Steve Ballmer thing, but I know it's or an anti-Steve Ballmer thing, but it's more of a shows the openness that Satya brings to the helm, and that, you know, it's not so much that you have to, everything you own and use doesn't have to be a Microsoft thing to be considered a Microsoft customer. It's like, if you use an Xbox, if you have a Windows phone, if you have a Windows laptop, if you have a Windows tablet, if you are on Office 365, if you're in Azure, if you're in one or any of those or all of them, you're a Microsoft customer. You don't have to buy 100% of the platform. And I like that. And you can really see that, especially from the cloud side. I think it's really predominant. But I mean, you see more and more like just cross-platform stuff. I see more Windows guys using Macs these days. I see a lot of, you see Windows phones, and it's just, you don't see so much of just a closed-minded, we're all one thing. Of course, if you went down to Cupertino and went into the Apple place, I seriously doubt you're going to see any squared tiles on phones anywhere.
I'm sure there's a few people that keep an eye on it.
But
I, you know, like you said, I think it's a maturity thing, right? It's silly to think that you can win by trying to exclude people from using stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely been a bit of a change, and it's much more accepted. And look, we've got loads of products, like as Microsoft here for a second.
Yeah.
We've got loads of stuff that's coming out for iOS and for Android and across the board, like the new Skype Quick app. Do you see that? The video messaging quick back and forth thing?
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty sweet. And it came out for, I think it's on Android as well. But it definitely came out for iOS and Windows Phone. And so there's more and more of that happening every day. I'm dogfooding a whole bunch of internal iOS apps that will be coming out at some point. And
can't go any further, I guess.
it's pretty cool. Yeah.
I think it really does help, too, when you take some time to get outside of where you live or where you spend most of your time and go into a different environment. It really changes your perspective. My perspective on, there's a lot of things that I accepted in Windows for so long and for the way that I've done Microsoft development stuff for so long. But when I switched to OS X and I've been looking at so many more dev tools and stuff that are out there and tools that are available that are, God, that have exploded out of the Node.js stack, that it's amazing to me all of the stuff that's available to you and the new things that are available to us and stuff that people that have, when I've been living in just the Microsoft space, that have just kind of felt like I've had, I don't want to say I've had these blinders on, but it's just like, you don't have to be 100% in one space. You can use best of breed these days. So
yeah, no, absolutely. It's I made the switch. I have a really rude analogy for how I feel right now, but I'm not going to use that. But let's just say I feel clumsy.
It's a great analogy, but it might get, we got to beep the whole thing out.
Yeah, totally. I just feel clumsy at the moment. You know, whenever you switch platforms or switch, you know, apps, you have these certain moves that your thumbs make and stuff like that, that you learn, right? And that you then don't think about. And so right now I'm basically thumbing around in the dark.
It's like using a totally different keyboard, right? You go to somebody else's machine to start doing stuff. Next thing you...
We're so childish. This is crazy.
You definitely can't use your analogy right now. All right, so, how about we switch?
Yeah, let's get on to some news.
Yeah, so you switched over that. I had a horrible day yesterday. Work stuff that's just challenging, but I got some really crappy news that I'm still pissed off about. But I found out after fighting and dealing with it for like 2 years, found out yesterday that I get to have a nice intensive shoulder surgery after the end of November, beginning of December to fix a torn labrum, torn rotator cuff, and remove bone spurs from my AC joint and from the A part of the AC joint, the avacromium or something. I can't remember how to pronounce it. But
so not to make light of this, but you're getting surgery. AC is getting surgery on his AC.
Yes, I am.
Brutal.
Yeah, I'm just hoping my AC doesn't go out when all this happens because I can't do anything about it.
Oh, man.
Yeah, really sucks. 8 weeks recovery. I'm in a sling for at least 2 weeks, but most people wear the sling a lot longer from a defensive, just to kind of broadcast to everybody, stay the hell away from this injury.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's incredibly painful.
I hope it works out well, and I hope speedy recovery, obviously.
Not fun, but anyway.
Hey, but not until after the Formula One, so we're safe on that.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I've got my pamphlet right here. I'm ready to call them the second we finish recording. I find out, hopefully I can get in at the end of November, right after Thanksgiving, and... have a really crappy Christmas.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I found something really, really freaking cool the other day that's kind of related to what we're going to talk about today.
Cool.
This guy, I think his name is Brady Gaster. he's one of the main guys for like tooling around Azure. Somebody made this button that allows you to basically from a web page, click the button and it deploys a website, a prepackaged website to, I think it's Heroku or to AWS. And so he went through and he wrote a blog post that shows how in the blog post, he has a little button. And when you click on this button, it takes a completely pre-compiled or pre-packaged website from GitHub. It spins up a brand new Azure website and deploys all the code over to it by just clicking a single button, and it spins everything up. It prompts you one time saying, you know, what region do you want?
Cool.
Dude, it's freaking awesome.
That sounds cool. We should definitely link off to that.
Yeah, I would definitely make a link to that in the show notes. But yeah, the deploy to Azure button from GitHub repos, man. It's wicked cool.
Yeah, nice. That sounds really awesome. I'd love to take a look at that.
Yep. Diving into the news. Before we do the Azure news, there was one bit of news, competitive news, that did come out that I noticed yesterday. I saw it come across Hacker News, dove in and looked at it, and I got to say I'm impressed.
Hmm.
So Amazon, or Amazon Web Services, AWS, they launched a directory service. And it's very similar to Azure AD, conceptually, to where you're essentially taking Active Directory and cloudifying it and turning it more into a PaaS offering.
Hmm.
It's fairly affordable. They have three different sizes. The sizes go from, I think, small, medium, large, and it ranges anywhere from 5 cents an hour to 15 cents an hour. That's US dollars, obviously. But some things that I noticed that were different about it compared to Azure AD is that it not only lets you deal with users, which is what users and I think groups, which is what Azure AD lets you do, but this is like a full-blown AD to where you can manage group policies and you can add, have computers join the domain and all that stuff, all inside the AWS directory. They have things like the equivalent DIR sync. So if you have an on-prem AD, how it can federate and synchronize with what they have up in the cloud. The link that I'll post in the show notes here about this new directory service, it's very heavy in how they talk about Active Directory. So yeah, you can definitely tell that they want to make sure that Active Directory customers know that this is an option for them. What I'm not completely clear on is the underpinnings. Is it actually Active Directory that they've implemented? Or is it like, and is the external kind of thing that we see, is that Active Directory and this directory is under the covers is actually something else, like an LDAP or like a SAMBA or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
In one sense, it doesn't matter, right?
No.
I don't think it really matters. It's just how we interface with it.
So taking a look, we'll link off to the blog post where they announced this, but having a quick, I'm new to this, so I'm no expert in this. Let's just caveat by saying that. But by reading it, from what I read, seems like there might be two modes. There's either you need a directory or you've already got a directory. And if you've got a directory, they've got this thing called the AD connector directory type, which is really like a pass-through proxy for Active Directory. So in the cloud, you can join stuff to it. And it's kind of like reads like it's a local endpoint that then passes the requests back through a VPN or an AWS Direct Connect back to your on-prem AD. So that's the kind of like, I guess, almost like extending your Active Directory into the cloud by providing a proxy to pass through.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm not clear on is if you don't have a directory, is this thing also the equivalent of a completely standalone directory?
Yeah, and that's the part that I wasn't totally clear on, but seems like it could be because looking through the screenshots, it does show things about how you can set up a VPN tunnel back to your environment.
And... Oh, yeah, look, here we go. It says AWS Directory Service. This is a managed service, provides two types of directories. You can connect to an existing on-premises directory, or you can set up and run a new SAMBA-based directory in the cloud. So yeah, so they do have a solution for that proxy back to on-prem, but also one in the cloud, just standalone if you want as well.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this goes back to, I can't remember what episode it was. I wish I could remember that. But we were talking about how critical identity is to the whole cloud story, right? Especially for businesses and enterprises. And without identity, everything else sort of hangs off that and hinges on the ability to authenticate and authorize people against resources. And people have such a, you know, organizations have such a huge investment in identity already on premises that if you don't have a solution for that in the cloud,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're just pushing things uphill.
Well, apparently they built this product because they listened to our podcast and they heard you say that. So that's pretty impressive.
Not bad. Hey, they're listening. That's amazing.
If they are listening, I'm not implying that. That was a joke, so no suing us.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I think the equivalent of this in Azure would be, well, obviously there's Azure AD, but that doesn't let you join machines to it yet, right? That's not like, I can't, you know, right-click properties, machine thingies, you know, connect to a corporate directory and then join a machine to Azure AD. But you've got the equivalent of the Direct Connect thing where you can VPN back to your own, either a site-to-site or point-to-site VPN.
Yep.
And then join your machines to AD back on-prem from that are running in Azure or in AWS.
Yeah.
But this kind of gives this proxy thing, which runs up in AWS as well.
Pretty slick.
Yeah, nice.
Cool. Okay, so let's dive into the news. Now, we've got, I think I just counted 13 or 14 Azure news items. So some of these we might go through somewhat quickly.
Yeah, we might have to just sort of run through them and then pick our personal favorites we want to talk about a bit more.
For those of you who aren't standing over our shoulders, we're sharing a note with each other that we've got a long bulleted list of things. So
yeah, why don't we start with the event? So this past week, there was an event in San Francisco. It was on October the 20th. And basically, it was a Scott Gu and Satya Nadella show, right? So Satya got up and talked about the importance of the cloud and what Microsoft are doing and things. And then Scott Gu came out and was just like, here's all these stats and here's all this cool stuff and here's all this new stuff we're doing. And I just sat back and read the blog at the end. I was busy off doing something else at the time. I couldn't watch it live. But I just read through. I was like, damn.
I know. I was reading it. And I was just like, Jesus Christ, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, totally. Totally. So
rip off these numbers that we have here. We can do this one real quick.
Yeah. So one interesting stat that I think, or one thing that Satya did during his presentation is he pulled up a slide that said Microsoft loves Linux. I think it was Microsoft, or was it Azure loves Linux? I can't remember. I'm pretty sure it was Microsoft loves Linux.
Yeah.
And it had Microsoft and the little pink heart, and then it had Linux afterwards. And I almost fell off my chair. That's a change for Microsoft, for sure.
Do you remember when, was it Bill Gates said when way back in the day, he's like, oh yeah, Linux is never going to catch on or something?
I can't remember that, no.
I do remember something like that, but yeah.
I'm sure it's been immortalized on the intertube somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, he came up and he said, Microsoft loves Linux, says 20% of the virtual machines running in Azure are Linux, which, you know, to be in all fairness, the Azure guys have been focused very heavily on making sure that Azure will run a whole bunch of different stuff, right? So it was just kind of surprising that they came out and really were so forward about it, right? But it's no real secret that Azure runs all these other things really well too, right? So that was kind of interesting. Some of the other things that came out, Azure now has 19 regions, and Scott Gu announced that there are two lighting up in Australia, a new region in Australia, or two new regions, I think they call them in Australia, for redundancy, right? And let's just say Australia's big enough to have two data centers and to be completely geo-redundant, yeah. Right? Yeah. It's practically like living on the other side of the world, yeah, between these two data centers.
I thought the stats, though, about how, like, we've always heard these things about regions, but I thought that the way he explained how the regions work, now that was part of another event that happened 2 days ago called Azure Comp 2014, where he said each region can have up to 16 data centers. A data center is just a building, right?
Yeah.
So each region can have up to 16 data centers. Each one of these data centers are the size of a American-style football field, which is 100 yards plus 10 yards on either side. And then you could take two jumbo jets and link them back to back in front of these. He goes, not something we have tried, but we actually, you could actually fit them on the thing. He's like, I don't think that's something we would actually, he said something that was kind of funny when he did it, but it, each one of these regions can hold up to 600,000 servers. So that's 600,000 servers times 19 regions is what the Microsoft cloud looks like today.
That's a bunch of Ethernet cables.
Wow.
That's a lot. Here's a funny thought for you. Who's going to be the first cloud provider that provides a region in the sky? Who turns those jumbo jets into flying regions?
Skynet, right?
Who puts them in space?
That's really the cloud. Ooh, I like the space one.
Well, that's above the cloud. That's the next generation of cloud computing right there. Space computing.
I like that.
Hey, with all this private space flight stuff going on, it would be fairly, well, not, I was going to say fairly straightforward, understatement of the century. Surely somebody's going to, you know, put up a orbiting data center. Come on, Elon, you can do this, buddy. You heard it here first, folks. You heard it here first.
It was the other stuff too. Microsoft spent $4.5 billion on Azure last year, adding over 10,000 customers a week in Azure, $30 trillion. That's a T. As an RST, T
trillion
storage objects in the blobs or in the Azure storage, 3.5 million per second storage transactions, 1.2 million Azure SQL databases, 2 million developers register with Visual Studio Online, and they double their compute and storage capacity every 6 months.
Yeah, I'd heard that one before.
That was a build.
Yeah, there you go. That was, they talked about doubling it, right?
Yeah.
That blows my mind. Like, can you imagine the delivery dock? It'd just be like a steady stream of trucks dropping off containers.
What blows my mind about this, this is, so imagine the logistics, I mean, of the technically what they're doing, just imagine the overhead side on Azure. That's not just the, I mean, you could slice it so many ways. What's the monitoring, what's the performance, what's the threat model and all that kind of stuff work. But imagine just saying that you are constantly adding stuff nonstop.
Yeah.
All these different features that they're releasing nonstop and they're growing nonstop. This organization is absolutely amazing to me. It's a great, I love being involved in this space.
Yeah, it's just mind-boggling numbers, right?
Yeah.
And they do it brilliantly. And it just blows my mind. One other thing you mentioned during the show is like, there are really only three companies on earth that can do stuff at this sort of scale, right? And it was Microsoft, Amazon, and Google. Or maybe it should be Amazon, Microsoft, and Google, if you want to do it in the order. But yeah, and it's true, right? Doing things at the scale, spending $4.5 billion last year on Azure alone, you can't do that investment and do global, like Earth scale stuff like this, unless you're one of those guys.
That's expenditure of many countries, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, speaking of epically big numbers.
Yeah.
Let's do two more things real quick here.
Sure.
A couple weeks ago, we talked about, actually, maybe only 2 weeks ago, a new series of virtual machines called the D series.
Yeah.
Now we have another series of virtual machines in Azure called the G series. And yes, it is called G because the code name is Godzilla.
Godzilla. And excellent.
The slides that Gu showed even had a little picture of Godzilla on them. So these are dedicated VMs that go from a G1 to a G5. Of course, a G5 is just
G5
awesome.
G5 is the best. You know there's a G6 now, right?
There is a G6. I have flown on two different G5s. I think you've done it too. It is, there's no other way to fly.
Spectacular. Oh yeah, totally.
So a G1 starts 2 CPU, right? 2 CPU core, 28 gigs of RAM. Here's the epic part. 406 gigabytes of local dedicated SSD storage to that VM. And it goes all the way up to a G5 with 32 CPUs, 450 gigs of RAM, 3.5 terabytes of local SSD. That, my friends, is one epically awesome Minecraft server.
Isn't it? Yeah, you're going to get my six-year-old son all excited. He'll be like, why can't we stand up one of those and use it for Minecraft? Pricing hasn't been announced. Is that right?
Yeah, pricing hasn't been announced, but I can tell you, I think that I would blow my $150 credit on boot.
Yes. I was going to say, I'm going to have to break open his piggy bank to run it for a minute.
What was I going to say? Preparing your device shuts down.
Yes, right. Sorry, you've run out of credits. Oh, bad luck for you, buddy.
I said 3.5 terabytes, right?
Yeah, no, I think you said 3.5. Isn't it 6.5?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. 6.5 terabytes because 3.5 terabytes of SSD just ain't enough.
Just not quite enough. Yeah, that's pretty sweet. So I don't know what the configuration of that 6.5 terabytes of storage is.
It's huge, my friend.
That's it's
huge.
Big.
Hey, and on the subject of big, let's keep going big here. Get this. Dude. What is the most frustrating thing? No, I'm keeping this one clean. We're not going to your analogy. So what is the most frustrating thing when you're doing something like SharePoint in the cloud, when you're trying to virtualize it using IaaS? What's the most frustrating thing, the biggest bottleneck you run into?
Not enough IOPS.
Not enough IOPS, because each disk on a virtual machine in Azure is limited to 500 IOPS. And so when you set your SQL box up, you usually have to spin up so many different disks to try and put the different hard drive or the different databases on different hard drives. But guess what? You can bump up to premium storage to go from 500 IOPS on your VM to 50,000. That's a 100-fold increase in just one release. And oh yeah, guess what? The reads are guaranteed to be less than 1 millisecond latency.
But wait, that's not all. No, I'm kidding.
It isn't. It's dedicated storage too. It's not even shared.
That is pretty badass. Like, yeah, there's been a lot of complaints about having to really be like a super ninja to get the best IOPS out of your setup. And it's been achievable, right? There's been people that have done some pretty good stuff, but this just sort of blows the lid off it, right? Like, what the hell?
Can you imagine somebody going into a meeting right now and they're like, No, we have to use this because, you know, you can't do this in the cloud because you only get 500 IOPS and da-da-da, we need more IOPS, and give you the feedback. And Microsoft reps just suddenly goes, how about 50,000? He goes, ha, yeah, it'd be great. And he goes, no, you can do it now. And he goes,
yeah.
Oh, well, you just took all the air out of my sails.
Say what? Yeah, fair. That is craziness. I'd love to see or hear more about how that is achieved. Like,
and pricing.
How it's done and the pricing, yeah.
I really want to see that. It's got 50,000 IOPS has got to be, they've got to be using SSDs.
Striped up the wazoo, yeah. Right? Like every which way to Sunday.
An SSD SAN.
Oh yeah, for sure, right? Yeah. Like absolutely. You've got to be parallelizing the living daylights out of it to get that,
yeah.
Actually.
Okay, so man, we could talk about some of this stuff for so long, but this is a big news one.
Yeah, the only last point on that is I think it'll be interesting to see how the folks that are doing IaaS with doing SharePoint and IaaS and Azure sort of just like throw all of their guidance out the window and come up with some new guidance. So,
well, I mean, you know, and it's going to be interesting too, because I mean, I wonder what the pricing is, how extreme the pricing is, because, you know, if it's like I'm going from 500 to 50,000, if it's really expensive on the 50,000, you know what the next question people are going to have is, give me some middle ground options here where I only need not 500. How about 5,000 instead of 50,000?
Well, it does say up to 50,000 IOPS, right? So is there some sort of scale? Can I pay for more IOPS or how does that work? I guess we'll see.
As of recording, we don't know.
Yeah. Well, we'll stay tuned on that because that's an exciting development.
Hey, so next thing they got there that we have on the list here is Docker. So Docker, for those people who aren't familiar, give you the quick little fire hose. Everybody familiar with virtual machines? The concept of virtual machines is put them in the cloud, or put them somewhere, and you can run basically a whole machine inside of a physical box. Docker essentially says, let's factor that down even more. So you create a thing called a container. It's not a full machine, but it's just giving you some services like CPU and whatever, plus additional configurations. Like I can say, I want a Docker that has Node.js and Mongo on it, or I want one that has this and this on it. Mm. And you could then run multiple Docker containers on the same machine. Docker is a Linux thing. Previously has only been available on Linux, but now what Microsoft is doing is they're saying Docker is coming to Windows. And Docker it's not a Microsoft thing. Docker is an open source thing. Google's really adopted it for their cloud story, for their like VM cloud story. So it'll be interesting to see. It's very popular. I'm curious to see how popular it'll be in Azure. You know, there's a lot of like pre-configured templates that are out there from the Docker Hub. It'll be really interesting. We got a couple links to it pointing to it as well.
I don't know a lot about Docker. I mean, I haven't ever used it, but I've read a little bit about it. And it's sort of, to me, it seems like it's almost like a hardware abstraction layer, right? And it's you know, like your HAL and your computer, right? It's how PCs have run for a long time. Mm-hmm. But it sort of feels a little bit like the difference in Azure between IaaS and PaaS, but a little more control than PaaS gives you, somewhere between those two.
The way I look at it is, you know, when you have a physical box, you've got to deal with the hardware, you've got to deal with the power, you've got to deal with making sure that the drivers are all set and all that stuff.
Yeah.
When you go to a virtual machine, you say, I don't care about the hardware, I get a set thing, but I still have to deal with the OS configuration and installing things and all that.
Yep.
Docker says, let's take that one step further and just say, look, we got some things already set up for you. You don't have to worry about the OS. You just run within this. You get a limited set of stuff that you're going to run. Here's a little template now to run a website. And you go, well, no, I need to load balance my website across five different servers. You go, okay, five different Docker containers, yeah. And we'll point to each one of them. You don't need a full-blown server.
It seems real close to PaaS.
Yep.
Real close. But it still gives you a little bit more because you still have to tell it resources and stuff.
It's like packaged PaaS.
Yeah, gotcha.
It's more like packaged PaaS to me, but it's more it falls more in the IaaS space too. So,
but the interesting part about this is that PaaS on Azure is quite proprietary, meaning you're either deploying you know, like a web role or a worker role and you have to package for Azure.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're just deploying a ASP.NET website and it runs on an ASP.NET thing,
yep.
Or Azure websites. But this seems like it's one level back from that, which is like you build an app and you can run it somewhere, but now you've got this intermediate layer Docker that sort of figures out all the platformy pieces and wire stuff up for you.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
That'll be pretty sweet. We'll have to keep an eye on that and try and have a play around and reconvene on the subject at a later date.
Yeah, there's a, actually, let me add a note here to our to my notes just to make sure I go in and add this in the show notes. There's a really good interview with a guy that does a bunch of Docker stuff on the Azure podcast from a couple episodes ago. So I'll make sure that we put a link to that in there as well.
Very cool, very cool. Skipping ahead through our list here a little bit, one big thing I think we should cover is the Microsoft Cloud Platform System, CPS, aka Azure Cloud in a Box. This has been like an enigma for years, right? And there were plans years ago to do this, and it sort of never eventuated. But this is basically the ability to deploy on-prem stuff that gives you an Azure consistent cloud in a box on-prem, right? So it basically takes parts of Azure and all of the learnings of how Microsoft run Azure and helping make available a pre-canned, and by can, I mean like actual tin from Dell, you know, from a hardware standpoint, in an actual box and deploy it on-prem. And so you can, then you can get many of the same sort of benefits of running. You can spin stuff up in, you know, VMs in the same sort of way, a various range of services, but do it either in your own data center or co-location or something along those lines. But this has been talked about for years, but it never actually eventuated other than the Azure pack for on-prem. But this kind of goes one step further and says, now you don't even need the hardware. You know, you could just buy the stuff straight from Dell.
It's basically buy a container.
Yeah, yeah. And it'll be interesting to see because this sort of helps give folks that aren't comfortable with the cloud for whatever reason, whether it be legal or just an aversion to it, a little bit of the benefit of some of the stuff that's going on in the cloud world, but still on-prem.
It's a cool offering. People have been asking for it. There's your private cloud right there.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll let you in on a little secret. I think it's safe to say this. It's been a long time now. So when we were designing the new SharePoint app model with taking code off SharePoint and running it externally, one of our big design tenets back in the day was this Azure in a box thing, which was an idea years ago when we were also designing SharePoint apps. This was going to be the way we were going to have folks deliver apps using the new app model on-prem. It was all going to be beautifully wired together. And so it's still doable today, but you have to go deploy IIS yourself and you have to put the app on there yourself and you have to do all of that. But the idea was you go do Azure in a box on-prem, and when you go add an app, it'll magically wire everything up for you to that.
That's interesting. Cool little nugget.
Yeah, yeah. That was years ago, probably, I don't know, 5 years ago, 4 years ago, something like that.
That's like ancient.
Yeah, that's why I think like, yeah, I think it's safe to say now because now this thing is actually coming for real. But it's been an idea for a long time, and now it's finally coming to fruition. So it'll be pretty cool to see what people do with it and whether it's picked up and how people use it.
Yep, totally agree. Let's see. So let's go into another one here. We got, let me throw Azure Marketplace. So
yeah,
I found this one interesting. So Microsoft has created a marketplace in Azure to where you can, if you're an ISV, you could create something, put it inside the marketplace, and customers in Azure could just go buy your solution or integrate it into their Azure subscription. What I found interesting was that 40% of all revenue today comes from startups and ISVs, 40% of all Azure revenue. Because now if you have something that you want to sell and you want to deploy inside of Azure, then you can put it in the marketplace, very much like every marketplace, like we have one for Windows Phone, for Windows, for iOS, for Mac, to where now it gives you more visibility to be able, people to be able to search your solutions and add them straight into your subscription.
Yeah, if you've got a product and you want to make it available for customers to run, then you can go through the, I think there's some sort of certification process that happens.
Probably, yeah.
As part of this to get listed, but and it gives you a direct channel to Azure customers. But I thought the more interesting part of this was the statistic that 40% of Azure revenue comes from startups and ISVs. And the point they were trying to make, right, is AWS is known for being a big infrastructure provider to startups who are building things, right? And they want to make Azure attractive to that audience for new startups to build products and run them and deploy on Azure. But obviously a lot of it is happening there already. So that's pretty cool to see. And I think, yeah, the marketplace just gives them another opportunity to get customer reach. But yeah, I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, I did too. I thought it was really interesting. See, another thing really quickly, Redis cache sizes and additions. The sizing for Redis cache today goes from 250 megs up to 53 gigs, and there are bigger sizes coming in the future. They also announced two different additions, a basic and a standard. Basic gives you a single cache node without a formal SLA, but standard gives you multi-node replicated cache configured in a two-node master replica configuration if you want to do high availability, which of course you do. And that's backed by an enterprise SLA. Another thing that they had here was around elastic scale support for SQL databases. It enables the data tier of an application to scale out via industry standard sharding practices while significantly streamlining the development and management of your sharded cloud applications. The new capabilities are provided through .NET libraries and Azure service templates that are hosted in your own Azure subscription to manage your highly scalable applications. Yes, I did just read that verbatim from the presser, and there is a lot more to it, but that's, I just wanted to call that out.
Yeah.
One more I want to call out, and then I want to kind of talk about both of them a bit for a sec, is let me call this one out, and then we have two more, and then I guess we're starting to run a little long, so we want to wrap it pretty soon.
Yeah.
But another one is Azure Automation. By popular demand, Microsoft Azure has added the ability to do hourly scheduling. So you could say run this thing every so many hours.
Yep.
They have a PowerShell script converter that supports importing PowerShell scripts as runbooks. So a runbook is kind of like a...
like a job.
Like a job, yeah.
Yeah.
They've also created a runbook gallery so that you can create a runbook and you can publish it for everybody else to use, or Microsoft publishes them. And then the big one is that now you can authenticate to Azure using Azure Active Directory org identity, which provides simple credential-based authentication for your automation jobs. That's pretty cool.
About time.
Didn't even have to beep that one out.
I was careful. This is the Azure AD auth is huge, right? So for people not familiar with this, or the reason why this is huge is because before, Azure was, you used to authenticate with Azure using Microsoft ID, right? What was used to be called Live ID. So you go to the management portal and you had to sign in with a Live ID. And the same thing went when you were using the automation stuff of being able to work with Azure in a programmatic way. You'd have to, you know, go through an OAuth process with Live ID. Now you can tie it to an Azure Active Directory. So the same identity you use to sign into Office 365, you can also sign into the Azure Management Portal and also through for automation too. So in most cases, this makes it much easier for organizations because they've already got, say, an account they use, sort of a standard account they use for, you know, setting up Azure and things, and now they can authenticate with the management portal the same way, and it's all goodness. Now, the trick here as well, if you're an Office 365 customer, is you have an Azure Active Directory already, whether you know it or not. Every Office 365 tenancy is backed by an Azure AD. And so if you go to the Azure Management Portal and sign in with your what's called the org ID or your Office 365 ID, which is really just an Azure AD account, and sign in and go through the setup process, you'll see your Azure Active Directory in the background. So now you can authenticate with org ID, you can get in, you'll see your AD, and it's much easier to deal with just going, for companies at least, much easier to just go straight with org ID everywhere and use Azure AD authentication and authorization versus having to deal with live IDs and Microsoft IDs along the way.
Yeah, there was a sample that Scott Hillier and I did for the Office Dev, for your group that's in the Office Dev organization on GitHub. So github.com/Office Dev. And Scott and I talked about it in one interview that we did a couple episodes back, but we showed how we built an application using the Azure Active Directory, Azure AD directory to authenticate, get a token, and use that same token to get into 365 without creating anything in 365. So it was very slick and it was very nice. It was showing that to developers, it really opens their eyes of like what true cloud development's all about. And they're really, it's pretty slick.
Yeah, it'll just really streamline stuff for organizations using it, and it'll really help.
Yep. So two last things, right?
Yep.
One really quick, tag support. So the new Azure preview portal, we can now tag assets to make it easier to find them.
Yeah, nice.
That's nice. That's kind of interesting because that's something that you and I were planning on putting into Curb. So I'm looking to see how to integrate what they've done.
Yeah, we'll build on it.
Exactly. They haven't implemented some of the ideas that we had, so that's good. But that's okay. You can replicate the same things or whatever. It just depends on how you execute it. But But hey, there's another one here. Now, this one was big, and this one, I actually learned a lot about this yesterday and some challenges with it. But Microsoft created something for Azure they announced called DocumentDB. So DocumentDB is a, and this was, we talked about it a little bit a couple episodes ago, but the idea is that it's a NoSQL database, which means there's, it's not like SQL Server, and the data is all stored in files on disk as big JSON objects.
Yep.
Now, this came from, my understanding is this kind of grew out of the OneNote stuff, and it was driven by OneNote, and OneNote is the biggest customer of this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so what they announced last week was, or this week, I should say, I guess last week, once this is published, is there's a document explorer in the preview portal, which means it's basically kind of like a SQL Server Management Studio where you can view the data inside of your database. And by the time this episode goes live, you'll also be able to write back to that data. They allow you to manage collections in the preview portal. Collections is just a concept that is very common in NoSQL databases and document databases. Mm. You can also view performance metrics and storage consumed at the document and collection level. And then it also has support for the tagging that I just mentioned a second ago. Now, with all that being said, I was interested in this. And then I listened to an interview yesterday on .NET Rocks with Oren, the guy behind something called RavenDB. And RavenDB is a document database as well that's on the .NET platform and is very popular. He did this interview, and I'll put it in the show notes, and I'll also put a note to the blog post in there about all the stuff that he's seen with it. And he was very critical of the Azure offering. He made some very interesting points that I found pretty interesting. Things like their fundamental like storage container, like the biggest thing you have is 16K. Whereas most document DBs are much bigger, the default storage is like 64K. So it means that all your data you have to go through and segment your data if it's bigger than 16K.
Interesting.
He said that it was a really big limitation, and that's not exactly one of those things you change on the fly. Like, hey, we now support this. It's like, that's a fundamental in how the thing is architected.
Yeah.
And then he also said something about how you don't have today, you don't have a sort or an order by in DocumentDB. And so anyway, there were some stuff, there were some things that I'm gonna link to his interview and also link to his blog post about it, about DocumentDB. I'm really interested in this.
Yeah.
Because we've been trying to shove stuff in relational models for so long, and sometimes it doesn't really make sense. And this is a cool Azure offering, and I thought it was like, oh, right away, I was like going, oh, fantastic, we have this in Azure now. And then right away I was like, maybe this isn't so good. This is interesting.
Well, again, no expert on this stuff, but I've listened to a couple of podcasts about it. I think there was one on Hansel Minute a while back, and it may have even been the same guy. The RavenDB does ring a bell. But one of the things I took away from that podcast was like all these NoSQL implementations. Like you say, I want a NoSQL database, right? And that doesn't mean anything. Mm. Like there are lots of different types and lots of different implementations. And it's not as simple as saying, I want a NoSQL DB. You have to say, we'll do this using NoSQL, but then you've got to go and do your due diligence on which one, because they've all got pros and cons, and one size doesn't fit all. Is the one thing I took away from that was like, okay, I learned something about NoSQL, and the one thing I learned was that it doesn't really mean anything other than, you know, the non-relational aspect of it. But every implementation has its pros and cons, you know, trade off speed for different features. And it's very much a balancing act about, you know, you pick your implementation based on your requirements for the features that it supports and the, you know, the performance requirements and all that sort of stuff and the underlying implementation details. You don't just say, I just want a NoSQL DB. And so this one, you know, I suspect has some pros to it, but also there, you know, sounds like there's a list of cons that go along with it too.
Yeah.
So it'll be some other column in the NoSQL DB comparison matrix where some have crosses and some have ticks, and you'll have to do some work to figure out which one is right for you.
Yeah, it's interesting. The interview that he had on .NET Rocks I found fascinating because I learned a lot about the NoSQL space. He talked about some of the challenges with some of the other NoSQL offerings. Like a really popular one that a lot of people probably heard of is Mongo.
Oh, yeah.
And MongoDB, he was saying like how when you write your data, wouldn't it be nice to know that it actually got saved? It's like, what do you mean by it actually got saved? And he's like, he said, well, if there's a, you know, whatever, if you do this, then not only could you not have the data saved, but in the middle of it, it could corrupt your entire database. And so there's this whole article on the MongoDB website that talks about how to implement a two-phase commit. You get through the whole thing and it says at the very end, this is more just a conceptual thing. In real world, it would be much more complex. And it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that an important thing? And if, I don't know. I mean, I don't have a lot of experience with document DBs. They're interesting. It's definitely, they're very popular. But I mean, I don't know. I just wanted to throw out there, and I will leave that for an exercise for the listener to go follow up on.
So the RavenDB one, I think, if I'm not mistaken, is that there's, it's open source, right?
Yes.
But it's also, is it done with .NET?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, I think I heard a podcast from the same guy.
I think it's built on top of .NET. There's like a .NET API to it. There's a JavaScript API. He's got JavaScript and REST over HTTP API for it. So yeah, I believe it is. It's founded on the Microsoft.NET stack. Mm. It's interesting. But there's some cool things about DocumentDB. You don't have to create a schema. You don't have to create the tables and stuff like that. You just create these objects and save these objects to the database. And you got to think about your modeling.
I'll find that Hansel Minutes podcast as well, because it was, and link to it in the show notes, because it was, for me, like, I knew the concept of NoSQL, don't really have much experience with it, but it was a really good introduction of, like, what is NoSQL and what are the problems it's trying to solve and stuff like that. So I'll see if I can dig up that link as well and stick it in the show notes, because it's, I'm not sure what the .NET Rocks one was like, but this one was a really good intro. We should maybe link to both.
I think I might have just found the one. Michael Yart. Yarchuk.
Yeah, okay. No, it's somebody different then.
Oh, cool. It's another one.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So next episode, we're going to record this one pretty soon. This one's going to go live next week, I guess. The one that we're recording right now, everybody's going to get this one on October the 28th. But next week, I guess your team has a little event going on next week that you're kind of busy for?
Yeah, I am flying this Sunday. I'm flying to Barcelona in Spain to go be at TechEd Europe, which is on next week, runs from the 28th through to the 31st of October. And we've got from an Office 365 development point of view for the developers, we've got a set of announcements next week that I'm going to detail on the podcast, and we'll walk through what those are. And it's very much, let me give you a little teaser, it's very much about, let me make sure I phrase this the right way so I don't let the cat out of the bag too early. But it's very cloudy. It's not just about Office stuff. It's about Azure stuff and Office 365 and what we're doing to make it easier for developers in those two worlds. So there'll be some tidbits for that. And then there's also, we're going to talk about what we're doing for mobile developers, like for people building apps for phones to make it easier to build stuff for Office 365.
That will be episode 54 going live on November the 4th, so the week following Tech at Barcelona. So that'll be a lot of fun to see what comes out of that. I won't be there, but I'll be watching from afar. I wish it was streamed, but I guess I'll be watching from afar for all the blog posts I'm sure you guys will be posting.
Yeah, there's the first one to keep an eye out is on blogs.office.com. We'll have a blog post going live on the morning of the 28th in Barcelona, which will detail all the stuff.
Cool. And we do have a couple episodes planned out coming forward. I know we've got the MVP Summit is coming up in a few weeks, and I've grabbed a few people from different Office 365 and SharePoint MVPs to have a 100% cloud discussion, one around dev, one around IT pro, and one around user interface customizations. It'll be Office 365 episodes, and don't worry, I'm doing everything I can to make it very clear that it is not a complete SharePoint hijack and SharePoint discussion. We're talking 365 and cloud. We will not be going on-prem. And with that, my friend, I have one more thing for you. I have a little bit of good news for you.
Ooh, what's that?
Facebook is up $1.78 over 80 today.
Oh, there you go. There you go. That's pretty sweet.
Cool.
Thanks very much. Good show. We went a little long. Sorry about that, but lots of news.
A ton of news. We could not get away with not doing that. So, all right, buddy. I will talk to you soon.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.